Acts chapter 12 again. I thought the title tonight was rather appropriate, When the Answer to Prayer Knocks on the Door, because that's what happens in our study tonight. So real quick, I'll give you a background before we jump into chapter 12 again. That way you know what's going on. Chapter 11, the Spirit of God ministering in Antioch, and an explosion, spiritual explosion in the church, people getting saved, being discipled, allowing the Spirit of God to control them, showing love from the Gentiles to the Jews as you come down to the end of that chapter. Then you come to chapter 12, and then all at once, it shouldn't surprise us. Peter said, think it not strange, and because when you come to chapter 12, it all changes, because the next thing you read is, at that same time, about that time, verse 1 says, that Herod stretched forth his hands and to vex certain of the church, and he took one of the pillars in the church, he took James and the brother John, and he killed him with the sword, hit him, beheaded. Then verse 3 told us that it pleased the Jews, and so he went ahead and he captured Peter. But it was the feast of Passover, and so he wouldn't have him put to death on Passover, so he would wait to have Peter put to death. But the intention was, he's living for the praise of people, Herod is, and the people cheered him on, and so they're just as guilty, the Jews are just as guilty as he is. And so he grabs on to Peter, and he's ready to have him executed too, in order to please the people. So what we're looking at here in this chapter is that while James died, Peter's going to be set free. I'll talk about that at the end of the study. But let me start you right on the top. Here's what it says. Last week in our study of Acts, we watched as Peter was sleeping between two prison guards and chained with two chains. And it was then that the angel sent from God woke him. Watch verses 6 and 7. Says, when Herod would have brought him forth the same night, which is the 11th hour, God waits till the very last minute to reach down and rescue Peter. God often allows things to go until there is absolutely no human way to fix it. And then he steps in, because then he gets all the glory. And that's exactly what's happening here. Verse 6 again. And when Herod would have brought him forth the same night, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers bound with two chains, and the keepers before the door kept the prison. And behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shined in the prison, and he smote Peter on the side and raised him up, saying, arise quickly, and his chains fell off from his hands. So verse 6 says Peter was sleeping, which we talked about last week. Watch what I have on your paper. Peter has come so far in his faith here. Not long ago, he was denying the Lord while warming himself by the fires of the world. I'll give you a little glimpse of that. Back the night Jesus was arrested, John 6, 18, 17 and 18, it says, then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, art thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. Remember, he denied that three times. Verse 18 is what I wanted you to see. And the servants and officers stood there who made a fire of coals, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Peter had grown cold that night. He drifted away from the Lord. Watch this. Peter had grown cold back then, but he was not cold now. He's spirit-filled, and he has faith, and his faith shows in his ability to sleep while awaiting his execution. He reminds me of David in Psalm 3, and I'm going to read this for you. When I read this, as I read down over it, it's, you could almost understand that Peter would have penned the same words at this time. The background of Psalm 3 is rather interesting. It has been written by David when he was running for his life from his own son Absalom, who decided to overthrow him and wanted to become the king. And Absalom had gathered all of the majority of David's men. He got his own personal counselor, Ahithophel. He jumped from David's side over to Absalom's side. He took a lot of David's people and he took them over to his side. And so there was a lot of people that were at David. But watch what David writes in Psalm 3, 1 through 8. He says, Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. And as I said, you could almost imagine Peter penning these same words. Many there be which say of my soul, there's no help for him in God, Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill, Selah. I laid me down and slept. There, that's why I say this sounds like Peter. I slept and awake, for the Lord sustained me. Peter could say the same words. Chained with two chains. That was so unusual. Normally it was one chain. But Peter, Herod no doubt knew what happened earlier back in Acts chapter 5 and how they had got out of prison. And so this time it was like he was saying, I'm going to make sure you don't get out. So he's got him with two chains. And Peter knows what's coming. He knows that there's going to be an execution. And he knows that Herod's going to wait till the Passover is over. But I go back to what David writes again. He said, I laid me down and slept. I awake, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people, Selah. I love that last verse. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Rescue, being saved out of circumstances. That's exactly what was going to happen with Peter here in a moment. And it's happening whenever we read those verses that Peter's sleeping between the two soldiers all at once. The angel from the Lord, that's really probably the proper interpretation of that. It says here, the angel of the Lord, it's an angel from the Lord, came upon him, and the light shined into prison, smote Peter on the side. He must have been sleeping pretty good, because he had to kick him in the ribs to get him up. You would think if you're sleeping the night before you're going to be executed, any little noise will wake you up, wouldn't it? Any little light, especially in a dark old prison, gloomy and probably damp, anything, you would sleep lightly. It sounds like Peter wasn't sleeping very lightly because the angel had to hit him on the side in order to get him up. So Peter's enjoying the sleep that he's got at that time because he has come so far. He has come so far when the night that the Lord was arrested, he denied three times knowing the Lord, being associated with him. He denied that. So his faith wasn't very strong at all. Here, the faith in Peter is just kind of oozing out all through the prison because that's the only way you could sleep in the midst of that situation if you knew tomorrow you were going to be executed if God did not perform a miracle. So that brings me to the point that we're looking at this evening, the power of prayer. Watch 8 through 10. And the angel said unto him, gird thyself and bind thy sandals. So he did. And he saith unto him, cast thy garment about thee and follow me. And he went out and followed him and wist not that it was true which was done by the angel. In other words, well, let me read this. But thought he saw a vision. Peter didn't even think this was happening. Like, this is completely out of the ordinary. Verse 10. And when they were past the first and the second ward, that would have been the soldiers that were set to watch. They really had Peter guarded. The first and the second ward, they came unto the iron gate that leadeth unto the city, which opened to them of his own accord. And they went out and passed on through one street, and forthwith the angel departed from him. So he's on his own there. He got him out. God used the angel to get him out. So I what's your paper? I want to give you a couple thoughts here. Three points here in these verses that we need to see. Number one is this. God set Peter free, but Peter still had a responsibility of doing his part. You know, and I pointed that out briefly last week. The angel said in verse 8, gird thyself, bind on thy sandals, cast thy garment about thee, follow me. He could have picked him up and carried him. He could have made sure that he was completely clothed and that he had shoes on his feet. But he said, Peter, look, you got a responsibility here. This is what you need to do. We're going to get out of here. But I'll do what you can't do. What you can do, you need to do. Watch the paragraph. When God moves in our lives, we too have a responsibility to do what we can do. If God opens the door for someone to get a job, they then have the responsibility to get up every day, drive to work, and do the very best they can. God will do what we cannot do, but what we can do for ourselves is our responsibility. When God told Noah the flood was coming, it was Noah's responsibility to cut the lumber and to build the ark. God did what Noah could not do, and that was he brought the animals two by two. But Noah had to build the ark. God would work in the heart of Artaxerxes to allow Nehemiah to go to Jerusalem, but it was Nehemiah's responsibility to motivate the people and to build the wall. When the Lord fed the 5,000, he multiplied the fish and the bread, but the disciples had to distribute the food. And I could go on and on and on. So the point that I want you to understand is God will do for us what we can't do for ourselves. But then in the midst of that, we have a responsibility. There are things that we can do and we need to do all that we can. And God expects us to do that. He expects us to do that. Just like with Noah. You know, I'll use another one here. So whenever it comes to reaching people with the gospel, it is God that changes the heart. It is the Spirit of God that convicts the individual. It is the Spirit of God whenever the seed is in the heart he's the one that gives the increase. But you know what? It's our responsibility to sow the seed in it. It's us. It's on us. It is our responsibility to go out and sow the seed. I remember reading years ago, I don't remember who wrote it, but they basically said this, if you were a farmer and you wanted to see a good crop and you sat in your house and you prayed for rain and you prayed for sunshine, but you never sowed any seed, you're not going to get a crop. He said it's the same way whenever it comes to reaching people with the gospel. If we don't sow the seed, there's not going to be a crop. There's not going to be a harvest if the seed is not sown. And so all that said to say that, yeah, God does miraculous things and he'll work in our lives and do things that we can't do, but there are things that we can do and we need to do those things. Number two, watch this one. And I got to add a word here because somehow, some way I missed it. The people praying did not realize what was happening in the prison. They didn't know. They're back in Mary's house. We'll talk about that in a moment. They're back in Mary's house. They're praying. They're praying without ceasing. They're nonstop. They're praying for Peter in this situation. Verse 5 says this, Peter therefore was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. So they're praying, they don't even know what's going on. They don't know the angels come in there and hit him in the side or kicked him in the side and told him to come on. They don't know the gate swung open. They don't know any of that. Watch the point here. I point this out because there are many times when we grow weary of praying. But looking at this passage, we can see that there are times when God is working and we're not aware. It is critical that we do not give up and stop praying. We can't. You can't stop praying for someone. Watch this. Let us notice something in Genesis, which is a conversation between the Lord and Abraham when it was announced that Sodom was to be destroyed. And this is Abraham's intercession. Genesis 18. Here comes the conversation. Abraham's intercession. God has announced that Sodom's going to be destroyed. So here's what you got. Verse 24. Abraham, peradventure, there be 50 righteous within the city. Will thou also destroy and not spare the place for 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked? That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And the Lord said, If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. And Abraham answered and said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. Peradventure, there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for lack of 5? And he said, if I find there 40 and 5, I will not destroy it. And he spake unto him yet again and said, peradventure, there shall be 40 found there. And he said, I will not do it for 40's sake. And he said unto him, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Peradventure, there shall 30 be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak, and unto the Lord, peradventure, there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure, 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. Watch the paragraph. I think this will put it what I wanted to communicate to you. Reading the text should make us wonder what would have happened if Abraham continued to pray. Stopped at 10. He stopped at 10. What if he had asked the Lord to withhold judgment for one righteous person? Because we know there was one. There was one, and that was Lot. Possibly Abraham stopped too soon. I wonder how many times we've stopped short with our prayers. How many times have we prayed and thought, you know what, well, there's nothing happening. I don't see anything happening. I'll get to something here in a moment. Getting back to our text, the church was praying, and they had no idea that in the prison their prayers were being answered. Listen, you don't know. We pray for individuals. I've said this over and over and over again. You don't know what God's doing because you don't see, you can't see inside the mind or the heart of the individual that you're praying for. They can put on a face that makes it look like everything's just fine. If you're praying for them to be convicted and to come to the Lord, and you're praying for them and you don't see anything, or you're praying for a relationship between a couple of people and you don't see anything happening, but you don't know what goes on in their minds when they go home at night and they lay their head down on the pillow. You don't know what God's doing. You don't know. Nor do we know his timing. I'll get to that in a moment. So that was the second lesson there, that the church didn't realize what was happening while they were praying. The first one was that Peter had a responsibility. The third one, and this should be an apostrophe S, the enemy's desire toward all believers. I see that in this situation right here. Watch this. The third point that I want to notice here is what the enemy desires to do to every follower of Jesus Christ. It is his desire to get us chained to something and then destroy us and our reputation. Peter was in chains because he was walking, it should say, in the will of God, and he was a threat to Satan. Each of us are a threat to Satan, and he would love nothing more than to get us in chains to keep us from what God has for us to do. But the question is, what are the chains that he uses? There are a lot of them. I'll give you three. I only have two highlighted here. The other one I kind of blended in with the second one. But number one, sin. Many believers have stepped away from the path that follows the will of God, and they become involved in sin to the point that they are chained, and Satan is devouring their testimony. There are a lot of believers that get into that situation. Don't think it can happen. It can. Look at what happened to David in the Old Testament with Bathsheba, and then having Uriah murdered on the front lines. Satan would love nothing more than for one of God's children to fall into sin somewhere and be chained to that sin and struggle and struggle and struggle to the point that he can devour their testimony, and to the point that God just can't work through them. That's what he wants. So one of the chains is sin. Another chain is fear. This is a big one. There are many believers today that are chained with fear. These chains are keeping some from leaving their homes. A matter of fact, let me comment on that. I know people right now that since COVID, they have maybe been out 5 times. That was 2019. This is 23. They don't want to go out. That fear settled in, and they are literally chained with that fear. And they, one of the people that I know for sure is a believer, is professed salvation. Matter of fact, came here. Hasn't been back since that. Let me go on. Others are chained with the fear of failure, so they will not exercise their gifts. They're afraid of failing, so the chains of fear get on them, and they won't step out. Still, others are chained with the fear of rejection. They, too, are not serving. Okay, now, here I should have drawn another one. Another chain would be the world, and that's really should be probably headed up here. So let me take it from there. It says, I know believers who are chained by the world in the sense that they have a desire to live for what the world has to offer, and they are all chained up with activities. They're just entangled, and Paul warned about that in 2 Timothy 2, 3, and 4. He said, therefore, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. You know what that verse tells you right there, that following Christ is not easy. We are soldiers, and we are to endure hardness. Just be disciplined, just like a soldier would be that was involved in the military. You got to be disciplined. Number four, verse four. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, but that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. I know people that are entangled in the world. They're just entangled in the world. They are chained by the world, and so it's like they struggle. A lot of times I see this. They try to live with a foot in the world and a foot in the church. It just doesn't work that way. And Jesus said, you cannot serve two masters. You can't do it. But let me watch the next paragraph. If you have a loved one or a friend who is chained, let us learn from this passage that prayer works. Don't stop praying. Continue to lift them up daily, because you have no idea how God will work to get them free of the chains. 1 Thessalonians 5:17. The first part says, pray without ceasing. Pray without ceasing. No, that doesn't mean 24 hours a day, every minute, every second. But whenever you think about them, you pray for them in that situation. There's so many ways. When I looked at this, I thought, you know what? This is also a picture of where a lot of unbelievers are today. They are chained. They are in bondage, and they are chained. And apart from the power of God, they can't get free. They cannot get free. They can't get out of the chains. They can't get out of the bondage. It is only through coming to Christ and God setting them free through His power that they can get free from that. But in all that said to say this, it is prayer that made the chains fall off. Prayer made the chains fall off. So you got somebody that you know that isn't saved, don't stop praying for them, because you just don't know. You don't know what God's going to do. Watch verse 11. Let's move on. Get down to the end of this prison scene. And when Peter was come to himself, he said, now I know of a surety that the Lord has sent his angel and hath delivered me out of the hand of Herod. Watch this end statement. And from all the expectation of the people of the Jews. What's that about? Watch your paper. When Peter realized he was not dreaming, and I'm sure he was overjoyed, he'd been delivered from Herod and the people. The expectation of the people of the Jews was the expectation of killing Peter. They despised him. Satan wanted him dead. That's what it was. That is exactly what it was all about. It was an attempt to throw a blanket of fear across the church and kill two of them, kill James and kill Peter, and silence the church. That was the plan. Let me go on. The Jews hated him, just as they did his Lord. Here's the application. Sometimes we are surprised when people of the world would rise up against us, but this is to be expected, and Jesus even foretold what to expect. John 15:18 through 21. says, if the world hates you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. But because you're not of the world, but I have chosen, you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. So what Jesus is saying is this: they hated me, they will hate you. Now, let me give you something with that, if I could. The other week, on a Sunday morning, I did that message about the Church of Laodicea and how they were lukewarm. And I told you that in that city, there is historical evidence in that city that there were somewhere around 15,000 Jews in that city of Laodicea. It was a city on a trade route. That's why the city prospered so much. They had all the people coming through. But the point is this: all those Jews in that city, and in that church of the Laodiceans, Jesus never mentioned anything about persecution. They should have been under persecution. You go back, I gave you examples. Two of the other churches were being persecuted because, you know why? Because they were serving. You know why Laodicean church wasn't being persecuted? Because they were living for the world. They weren't doing anything. They weren't doing anything. Peter, is it any wonder Peter's in prison? He's kind of the spearhead of the apostles. He's running right out front. He's preaching the sermons whenever you come through Acts. He's got the keys to the kingdom. Open the door for the Jews. Open the door for the Samaritans. Open the door for the Gentiles. He's got the keys to the kingdom. He was there whenever the gospel, when those groups were saved. He was there. He was there. It's no wonder he was under attack right here. Jesus said that's what will happen. And when Jesus spoke these words in John 15, he presupposed that we would be active. If we're not active, you're not going to get any resistance, because you're just like we're like the Laodicean church, and we blend right in with the rest of society. We're no different. That's not the way we're to be. It's not the way we're to be. You know, I'll just add something here, if I could, to maybe spark us all. The other week, I told you that all the Jews going back to their homeland, you know, that sets the stage for, and it is that first regathering that Isaiah talks about in Isaiah 11:11. And there's only two regatherings, the ones at the beginning before the tribulation, and the other one is at the end of the tribulation. That's a regathering in faith. The first one's in unbelief, and they're going back now. And somebody had said to me, you know, you would think with them going back that God wouldn't allow the war, because now that'll disperse them and they'll go. And I said, no, you know what? From what I've been hearing, there are more going home now because they want to go back and they want to defend their land. They want to go back and they want to defend their land. So the stage is set there. But you know, there was something else that I thought about, and that was this: that this whole thing with Israel, and just like what I shared with you about Turkey and the Iranian assassination team that is out walking the streets looking to assassinate the Jews, that is satanic. Have you noticed, I don't know if you've caught this or not, the amount of satanic activity today? It is just everywhere. And it's not only over there. That is, if you want to see like the big scene picture of it, you just turn on the news and the hatred for the Jews. Just today, I think I caught before I came over here that down at our Capitol in D.C., I think there was a big march and a protest for the fact that the United States is supporting Israel in this. They don't want to see it. And so it's all, and anything that is anti-Jew, anti-Semitism is all satanic. But let me, with that said, without going too far, let me say this to you. When Jesus came the first time, I challenge you to do something. Look through the Gospels and look at the satanic activity. You know, you had people that were demon-possessed, had all kinds of diseases, and you know, Jesus just doing miracle after miracle after miracle. And you look at that, and you cannot deny that there was an abundance of satanic activity that was taking place before he came the first time. Is the satanic activity now the same thing before he comes for the second time? Just a thought in the midst of all of that. Watch 12 through 16. You say, boy, he led us right up to the edge and let us sit there. Well, we'll get back to that on a Sunday here sometime. Watch 12 through 16. And when he had considered the thing, that's Peter, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark. Now, let me say this. Apparently, and I think I have this in our notes, that Mary must have owned a pretty good sized house where they could gather for a prayer meeting. But he knew where they would be. He knew that. This is John Mark's mother. Let me read that verse again. And when he had considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came to hearken named Rhoda. And when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness, but ran in and told how Peter stood before the gate. And they said unto her, thou art mad. You're crazy. There's no way. But she constantly affirmed that it was even so. Then they said, it is his angel. That's an interesting statement. I didn't get into that tonight, but pay attention to that. I talked about that a little bit the other week. It is his angel. They recognized what I'm going to call guardian angels. The early church recognized that. Verse 16. Remember, Hebrews says that their ministering spirit sent forth to minister to those that are heirs of salvation. Verse 16, but Peter continued knocking, and when they had opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Okay, so come back to your paper. There's a lot to consider here, but I got to rip through it because we're out of time and I still got two pages. Peter knows where the others would be. Mary, the mother of John Mark, apparently owned a large house where they could gather to pray. When Peter knocked on the door, and Rhoda heard his voice, she was surprised. And when the rest knew it was Peter, they too were surprised to the point of not believing. I should have added that. These verses to help us know that they were not expecting Peter. They were more likely expecting Herod's guards to come and arrest them and put them in prison. If Rhoda had announced that a messenger came and told her Peter was dead, they would have believed her. But they doubted her words that Peter was at the door. Here's the application. Watch this. These disciples were praying, but they were not overflowing with faith. I'll tell you that. They weren't. They just weren't. They couldn't believe that Peter was set free. But they, you know what? The thing is, let me read the rest of this. They definitely believed in prayer. But like us at times, they lacked faith and God would turn this situation around, or at least turn it around in this way. Faith is required for our prayers to be answered. James chapter 5, 14 and 15 says, is any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up if he had committed sins, and they shall be forgiven him. I'm going to keep reading here. Those gathered at Mary's house certainly had faith, or they would not have been praying. But they were totally surprised when the answer of their prayers knocked on the front door. Let us also know that faith in what we're praying for does not guarantee that our prayers will be answered. Our prayers must be in the will of God. I got to say that. I have to say that. Watch 1 John 5, 14 and 15 says, this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us. And if we know that he hear us, whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we desired of him. Now, let me give you the next paragraph. I point this out because there are some who teach that teach you that if your prayers are not answered, it's because you do not have enough faith. There are a lot of people that will say that. If you're not seeing an answer to your prayers, if somebody's not healed, then you don't have enough faith. And what that does is that makes the individual feel, they shame them to the point of stating, well, the reason your prayers aren't answered, you don't have enough faith. If you had enough faith, they would be answered. And so it causes people to really question their own faith. Let me go on here. To those that would say you don't have enough faith, to that I would say the prayers in Acts 12 were answered with very little faith. Okay? They're praying, but when he shows up, they don't believe it. They don't believe it. What do you mean he's here? I guess the right response by Rhoda would be this. Well, isn't that what you prayed for? You know, but nobody says that, but that's what I get whenever I look at it. But watch this. The prayers in Acts 12 were answered with very little faith, and probably the prayers that are not answered in anybody's life is because they're not in God's will. Or possibly, watch this one, it's not in God's timing. Ecclesiastes 3:1 says this, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to every purpose under heaven. So, you know, if you ever hear somebody say, well, you don't have enough faith, or your prayers would be answered, what you're praying for, that person be healed, or this person be saved. Well, just bring them back here and just say, well, look at this. You know, here's a group of people, they're praying, they believe in prayer, but when the answer knocks on the door, they don't want to believe it. They don't want to believe it. They say, you're mad. Rhoda, you're mad. You are out of your mind. There is no way in the world that's Peter at the door. That's what they're saying. So if somebody says to you, well, you don't have enough faith, say, well, just come back here and look at these people, because they weren't overflowing with faith. That house was not busting out with faith, believing that Peter was going to be delivered and that he was going to show up at the door. They weren't expecting that at all. Like I said, if Rhoda would have went back in and she would have said, you know what, somebody just showed up and said Peter's dead, I'll bet they'd have bought right into that. They'd have believed that, because that's the way we are a lot of times, aren't we? We kind of expect the worst in a situation. I am so glad that, you know, it only takes a little bit of faith the size of a grain of a mustard seed, and God honors that faith. Watch 16 and 17. But Peter continued knocking. When they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. But he, beckoning them with the hand to hold their peace, in other words, just be quiet, he's saying, declared unto them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he said, go, show these things unto James and to the brethren, not the James that was killed. This would be the half-brother Jesus here. And he departed and went into another place. So let me run you down to an end here, okay? Peter told them what happened, then he departed. He was a fugitive at this point, and so he most likely went to a safe hiding place. James died for his faith, and Peter was set free because God had a different plan for each man. Conclusion and application. God has a plan for each of us also. Some go through far greater trials than others do. Some have much more of this world's goods, while others seem to struggle all their lives. So how are we to respond to this truth? Well, two ways, I think. Number one, accept what God has for us. 1 Peter 5:6-10. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. The time's coming. If you're going through a difficult time, if you're in a valley, if you're in a storm, if you just can't seem to get your head above the water because your flipper keeps falling off, know this, there's coming a time when you will be exalted. Casting while you're waiting, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. In other words, you know what? There are other people that go through the same things. Verse 10, but the God of all grace, there's an important line I underlined, who hath called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus. After that, ye have suffered a while, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, settle you. In other words, there's a lot to be said in verse 10. One thing that Peter's saying is, you know what? What you're going through is a part of God's plan. And these people were going through a lot that Peter's writing to. And he's saying this is a part of making you the person that God wants you to be. But in the beginning of verse 10, he said he refers to God as the God of all grace. Watch the last line there under that. Our God is the God of all grace. The supply of his grace is never depleted. His grace will sustain us in whatever we are called to go through. It will. His grace is always sufficient. Number two, here's the second response to that truth. Make our time on this journey count. And I'll borrow the words of Moses and what's considered by many to be the oldest psalm in a book of Psalms, Psalm 90. And Moses said this, so teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands upon us. Yea, the work of our hands, establish thou it. That ought to be our prayer. God, teach me to number our days. You know, I look around and I see things going on in the world, and I will say this, and I'm going to let you go because I ran way over, and the people in the basement are going to be ready to vote the preacher out here in a second. But listen, I look around in the world, and I realize that if I can get up every morning and I can go about my business and go about my day and have freedom and have health and have very few aches and pains, I am blessed. I am blessed. Steve just said to me tonight, you know, when you, and I know Dr. Dave's listening, but when you hear the prayer request for him, it makes you realize just how much we have in life. Because you know what, it can all turn around in just a little bit of time. And so the good days that we have, we ask God, Lord, help us to use those days so that they count, so that they count, so that they count for you. Let me close this in prayer. Father, thank you for your word tonight. Lord, there's a lot in what we studied. Lord, these are good, solid, practical lessons for us. So, Lord, I pray that we would absorb them, that we would apply them, and that, Lord, that we would live them. Take us home safely. Lord, give us a good week the rest of the week. Guide and direct our steps. And, Lord, bring us back again at the next appointed time. Well, thank you for it all, and we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.